for the downgrade from Mary. But we'll do our best. So really quickly, so we're going to go through a presentation, and then the second half, it's going to be kind of like Jeopardy-style questions for you guys. So hopefully it'll be somewhat interactive. Okay, so quickly, I think many of you have seen these slides, so my apologies, but identity verification issues is something that just seems to never go away with the marketplace. And it's really important that we get our applications submitted and through, so we wanted to run through these briefly. So these are just some screenshots of what it's actually going to look like when you're going through the application. But the main takeaway is that even if you don't get an identity verified, you can still have the application submitted. So we don't want anyone that doesn't have an identity verified, and we're talking in particularly about undocumented immigrants, those applying for coverages that are pregnant, those new immigration, you know, with new immigration status that don't have credit history. So essentially, we just don't want those people to fall through and have their application kind of just sitting in the queue and limbo at the marketplace waiting for a determination. So these are basically just what's going to happen as you get prompted through. They're somewhat self-explanatory when you're actually doing the application. But in case someone's identity is not verified, you will have to go through the prompts, and then eventually it will take you to the full application, just as if someone else or someone's verified identity was verified. So that red bar, I'm sure many of you are familiar with, at least those that work with immigrant populations. That's kind of the error message of saying there's not enough credit history, or we don't have any data to say that this person is who you're saying they are. So that's the red bar is going to prompt you to try again and go through. See if you can just kind of go through these. Just go through those. I don't want to tell you exactly because you can do this. Now, in this step, there's an option to upload documents, and you can do that for marketplace applications, and that's because at the end of the application, when it is submitted, they're going to ask for that supporting documentation anyway. But for 10 Care and Cover Kids, that's an unnecessary step and a waste of your time to go ahead and do that. So kind of the workaround there to save you a bit of time is to go to the Return to My Profile. And previously, I recently just did this again, so there's been a little bit of changes. It's going to actually make you do that twice now. It used to just do it once, so it's another 30 seconds onto your enrollment. But once you click on My Applications and Coverage, it'll take you to the profile. And then, and then you would continue as normal. So you're going to apply for whatever the year and the state, of course, Tennessee, and start that application. So this is the kind of that extra that's going to make you do it one more time. It didn't used to do this, but now it's doing it. It's going to verify your identity again. And then it'll make you go through the screen. Some of these are optional fields, so I would recommend just putting them as optional if the identity wasn't verified. It's, again, it's kind of just redundant a little bit here. So this is that extra redo then. Now you can actually, in this image, now you're really going to be able to go to the application. But just, you know, go through these steps. I know you can all do that. So finally, here's the application. You're going to go through it just as you would any other application. However, this is the very last page. Now, this is the page where you want to not go any further if someone's identity is not verified. And the reason why you don't want to go any further is because if you were to press save and continue or submit, then when you do call the marketplace to push that application forward and get it submitted, it's going to take that marketplace representative all the way back to the very beginning of the application. And then on the phone, while you're with the marketplace, they're going to have to go through every single one of the questions you already answered. So if you were to leave off at this page and then call the marketplace and say, hey, we weren't able to get so-and-so's identity verified, when they log into that account, you know, of course, do the authorized representative information with the marketplace representative, then it's going to take that representative to this page instead of going through the entire application. Yes, question?
What's the blue there stuff? What does that say so that I know where to
stop? Sign and submit.
Sign and submit, so you can answer the questions, but just don't.
Yeah, usually even, I like to to read these agreement statements at the end of the consumer, because sometimes over the phone when the marketplace representative reads them off, it's kind of confusing and seems a little rushed and maybe can take away some of the confusion while you're on the phone at the marketplace so the consumer has an idea. But actually, even these, if you say agree on this page, usually this doesn't even say, but it will take you to this page when you go through it. Oh, is there in any way, Elizabeth, to make this? You'll get a copy of these slides, so later on you can go through, and you'll be able to see it a lot clearer on the actual computer, okay? Yeah, sorry about the blurriness. I already said this, so I just like to read those statements again, or before I call the marketplace, just so the consumer has an idea of what the marketplace representative is saying to them. So this is the page. If you see this part, you've accidentally pressed save and continue, and this just kind of means you've gone too far. Of course, it's not the end of the world. If you call the marketplace at this point, they're just gonna have to go through the whole entire application with the consumer again. Of course, a lot of the information is saved, but it still does take extra time. So just to save you time, I usually, if I accidentally go too far, then I'll just go back through it myself before calling the marketplace, just to save that. Okay, any questions on that? Okay.
So just to clarify, that process is really helpful for applying to cover kids or take care, especially if it's parents applying for children and maybe the parents are undocumented. Then you cannot upload documents to prove their identity because it's just not possible. In that case, it's really helpful to use that workaround. Does anyone have any questions before you go forward? So now we're gonna go through a couple of scenarios in which people might have multiple marketplace accounts or multiple applications that are not linked to their account. So in this case, so if a person has multiple accounts and you wanna verify their identity, then you don't wanna enter a social security number there if it's their second or third account. This is, does anyone have any questions about multiple accounts? Has anyone come across this before?
Where did you get that screen from? Is it part of the, does it pop up or something?
Mm-hmm. This is the verify identity screen, so it's the first one that's gonna show up after someone creates an account and before they start the application.
But will it say multiple accounts?
You know what, to be honest, this is Mary's slide, and neither me or Tracy has seen this before either, so if anyone has experience and wants to speak on this, it would be appreciated. Yes, in the back.
This is the old application screen, so it depends on as you're looking through this part of it. The first part is if you answer questions one way, if you can do the screen. If not, you can do the right screen. So it's the same application, it just looks a little different, and the questions are in different order.
Okay, so you're saying this screen is from the old application, and that that if now we're gonna get the blue screen application that will be in a different order.
So I think the take home though is really if the consumer has multiple accounts and you get to a screen like this or somewhat similar to this, if you don't put the social security number for the verify identity, it'll solve some problems because there's already an account associated with that social security number.
If you do or you don't put in the social
security number? Do not. Because there's already an existing one with it, that same number.
I ran into this because someone used their first name, like their full name, and then the next time they applied, they used just the middle name or the name they went by. And so they had two applications, and they were set in there. One was denied, one was set in there.
Okay, so you encountered someone who did have two applications under two different names, and you were able to clear it up by calling over the phone.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. The enrollment, they also will have the same account, right? If they don't have access to We can link.
Correct. If they have an account previously, they should be able to just enter that account for the next year as well. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
So can we clear it up without having to call? Because during open enrollment form in the marketplace, sometimes there's multiple times.
Clearing up having multiple accounts?
Without having.
So if someone already has an account and they decide to make a new account with you, I mean, the best possible solution is for someone to just have one account. So if they already have an account set up, to be able to use that account again, whether that means resetting a password or whatnot. But if for some reason you encounter someone who already has multiple accounts, you know, and you get to this screen, the workaround Mary has here is not to enter the Social Security number. And that way, that will be a workaround for being able to continue with the application without confusing those multiple accounts.
Well, will their application be properly processed without the Social Security number?
Yes, because they'll ask for it again within this application. This is just the verify identity section.
Okay.
This is, again, just the initial screen before you get into, to verify the identity, before you get into the application. Once you get into the application, do enter their Social Security number. Yes?
Okay. This only happens when people have done it in the same year, like
right.
They use one email account. At the end of the year, I guess they wipe all those out. It's like, I've actually went into the old account, deleted the application, and let me go on without this screen again.
Yes, I like that.
Okay, so what Andrew's saying is this is only relevant for within the same year. If it's in two separate years, then you should be okay. They should wipe all the information. All right. So linking an application to an already existing account. So many times you'll encounter consumers who have done the enrollment previously, maybe over the phone, and never actually created an account. And when you go ahead and create an account with them, it's really helpful to be able to link their old application to their new account so that all their information is in one place, even for previous year enrollments. So one way that you can do that is on this page here, which is under the My Applications and Coverage section of their profile. You'll find that there's this, towards the end, there's the need to find your application, and you wanna click on that link that says Find My Application. So once you click that link, it will prompt you to put in their application ID number. If you have that application ID number from the previous year, then you can just put it in there, and it should be able to upload that application directly to their account.
So this is really good if they do a marketplace application, say with the marketplace over the phone, and then you're helping them after that, so that way you can make sure, you know, their information was entered correctly over the phone. If they have to submit documents, you could upload it to an online account a lot easier than having to send it into the black hole in London, Kentucky. And so that's really the main point. And now it's not always going to be perfect too. Sometimes for whatever reason, the marketplace won't even be able to track and find the application, even if you do have the ID. So don't fret if you don't. But this is one workaround that is worth trying.
Usually, don't they send the application ID in the mail after?
So after you do it over the phone, they do send a copy of the eligibility result. If you say that you want to receive your notices by mail, and the application ID number will be on the eligibility result. Yes, but not everybody has that. A lot of people lose those.
And then the enroll that the person who got insured can do it online once he knows the application number, right?
Right, this is the point.
Can
so you can enter that application ID number in here once you create an online account to access that application you already did. Yeah.
Okay, so this is sending an application to Medicaid. As we know, the application is meant for marketplace enrollment, and here in Tennessee, the only way to apply for Medicaid is through that application. We know it's not always a perfect process because all the screening for all the different 10 care categories is not necessarily on that application. So there may be instances where you think someone is eligible for Medicaid, but the marketplace application says that they're not eligible for Medicaid and are instead eligible for something else or in a Medicaid gap or something like that. In that case, you can still send that application to Medicaid. The way to do that is if you go under their application in their account and go to eligibility and appeals, you can scroll down to the bottom and there should be an option to send the full, to send the application to Medicaid for a full Medicaid determination. So this is saying that to do that, you can do that for disability related categories, but you can actually do that in any case for any application that you might find needs to be sent to Medicaid. A lot of times this might be a medically needy spend down case or some of those smaller categories that take that Tennessee Justice Center went over yesterday. Those won't get caught by the application, and it's really helpful to use this send to Medicaid option.
And then, of course, if you believe your consumer is eligible for TennCare and you did not get a TennCare determination, because we are a determination state, you can appeal that decision as well as, of course, sending it as for the full determination for Medicaid on the marketplace. So don't forget to also send the appeal for the consumer when you also send them over here, so you have kind of both things going for them.
That's a great point. So anytime that you are sending an application to Medicaid manually, you should also be filing an appeal at the same time to make sure that the process goes quicker. All right, so now we're gonna, yes.
Question.
What do you say a determination state? Because most of the time, we may be eligible for. So how do we reconcile the two? Because determination means they did determine, right? That they're gonna get you.
Right.
So if the wording is maybe eligible for something, then.
So the question was pertaining to non-determination versus determination states. So Tennessee is a determination state, and we use what the health insurance marketplace eligibility results says as the determination. May be eligible for TennCare and eligible for TennCare period are still determinations for TennCare. So that's still getting sent over for TennCare, that's still treated the same way. It is a discrepancy, and of course we hate to see when it says may be eligible because we know it's gonna take longer than just a plain eligible for, but it still is that determination for Medicaid. They're still sending the application to Medicaid.
So you're saying that if it says eligible for TennCare, then the TennCare application gets to the TennCare Bureau, and some way, somehow, they find them ineligible. Based on the eligibility results, that people can appeal that result based on what they saw on the eligibility report. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, sure. You can appeal, yeah, you can appeal any decision from Medicaid, too. But if you get an eligibility, so the question was, on the marketplace, if you get an eligibility result that says either may be eligible for TennCare or eligible for TennCare, and that gets sent to TennCare, and then TennCare goes through and says denied or not eligible, you can appeal that with TennCare directly. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're right, but you definitely have that right to appeal.
I think the way, like, Chris, when you go to the TJC's trainings, the way Chris Palmer, the gentleman that spoke yesterday afternoon, stated it, that the state of Tennessee is supposed to accept what the marketplace determines as far as eligibility for TennCare. And I think in the beginning, we were seeing a lot of problems from the state end where they were not doing that. But I think from what I've seen and kind of heard from TJC that that's not so much the case. They're supposed to, whatever the marketplace is supposed to determine, the state of Tennessee is supposed to adhere to that because they selected to be a determination state.
So you can use that determined eligibility results as a ground to push your case?
Yes. And I would contact TJC and let them know.
Has anyone, on that note, has anyone gotten an eligibility result that says just eligible for TennCare period and have not gotten an acceptance?
Yeah. I've seen that several times. Like people eligible, but because Tennessee did not expand, I mean, they're eligible, but they're not getting coverage.
It says that.
Okay.
question is pertaining to the Medicaid gap, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So usually in the eligibility results notice, if someone falls into the Medicaid gap, it should say that in the chart where it says their name and then what they're eligible for. You know, I think it gives an explanation of you, because your state didn't expand Medicaid, you are not eligible for any insurance at this time. And it's kind of confusing. I understand that it might be confusing for a lot of people because it kind of says, well, you would be eligible for Medicaid, yeah. But, so it's kind of confusing and not very clear, but in that case, yes, if you got that answer on the eligibility notice, that means you're in the Medicaid gap.
Unless there's some sort of disability or something, most of the people I've seen that fall into that gap, that's the letter they get.
Yes.
Well, you can get it if we had it.
Right. And it is kind of confusing the way it's worded. Yes.
He also needs to make sure that they realize that that's also where they've now got their exception numbers.
Yes. So that's an important point too, is that on the eligibility results notice, if you fall into the Medicaid gap, you will also get a tax exemption code. Yes, Captain.
And if you get an application that says may be eligible for 10 care, that's a great education point to educate the consumers to not freak out. 9 times out of 10, they are eligible, especially if you took the time to pre-screen them and you know based on your pre-screening they are eligible. But what I've seen in a lot of my cases, if it says may be eligible, is that once it gets to the state may need more documentation. And that's important because I've had a lot of people that don't go to their mailbox or they miss something. Anything the state sends is time sensitive. So that's where I educate the consumer and say, hey, your state may be eligible. The state may be sending out some notices to you. Watch the mail. If you have any questions, come back to me. But we need to make sure if they are requesting more documentation, we get that in the time frame.
So Carolyn makes a really good point. For anyone who didn't hear that, if you get that eligibility determination of may be eligible for Medicaid, it's really important to educate the consumer that they will likely be getting letters requesting documentation from 10 Care. And in that case, they only have 10 days to send in that documentation. So it's really important that they check their mailbox, that they are on the lookout for those letters from 10 Care and send in that information as quickly as possible. Yes. Was it optional, like a list that you could choose from, or was it?
She called the office on Tuesday while we were driving here, and I tried to call her back yesterday afternoon, so I haven't got to talk to the consumer directly.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Likely, usually when 10 Care is asking for documentation, what they'll do is say, you know, we need proof of, for example, income. Here are the, just as the marketplace does, you know, here are the options of what you can send in. So it's likely that list is probably just, not that she needs to send in every single item on that list, but.
But that's the first one I've ever had that said they were eligible, not maybe eligible, but eligible, and they asked for that support.
Mm-hmm. Tracy, that actually might be a good one to just touch base with someone at TJC from, because it was my understanding that if it said plain just eligible for 10 Care, period, that was kind of like an automatic transition electronically to 10 Care. That was like the kind of no questions asked, they're determined eligible. Right. So I would be interested too to see what happens with it. That's not really cool.
But this is
10
Care
what
we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You
generally
10
Care, remember
that.
Right. That's what I was trying to get in touch with her last night and trying to see what was going on so I could know for sure exactly what her letter said. And make sure that maybe she didn't do a previous application for her.
That's a good point. So making sure that she didn't have a previous application. Yeah. Yes.
That is the norm for most people that I see. They said eligible, and then later on they write to them and ask just a few minutes before we came.
really good point. Thank you so much for bringing this up, because I see this a lot as well, and people working with a lot of immigrant communities will see this. Especially if you use that workaround that we talked about in the beginning, where someone maybe wasn't able to verify their identity with the marketplace and their application got sent to 10 Care or Cover Kids, they will get something from the marketplace asking for them to submit documents to verify their identity, or maybe to verify or to verify their immigration status or something like that. If a person is, if you know that that application got sent to 10 Care or got sent to Cover Kids, and you're positive that that happened, then in that case, the only communications you should need going forward are with 10 Care or with Cover Kids. The marketplace, you know, and in a 10 Care application, you can kind of think of it as just the means of doing the application. So they should not need to send additional documentation to the marketplace if their application has already been sent to 10 Care or Cover Kids. So I get a lot of those as well, and I think the thing I always ask people are, you know, if someone calls and says, I'm supposed to send in documentation, you know, the first thing I'll ask is look at the top. Does it say, you know, the marketplace, or does it say Healthcare Finance Administration? Does it say 10 Care? What does it say? What is the letterhead? And if they say, oh, it says the marketplace, and I know that they are 10 Care, that their application has been sent to 10 Care, I tell them don't worry about it.
I mean, so we should have,
yeah, so you could be proactive in the appointment with people and say, okay, your application, if you have a determination from Cover Kids or 10 Care, your application is going to be sent to that state entity. Letters that you get in the mail from the marketplace, are, I call them kind of back burner mail. Those are not nearly as important, if at all important, than the mail that you get from Cover Kids or from 10 Care.
But how do we know that that application has gone to 10 Care? Because you're saying it's pending.
Right. Well, if on their eligibility determination notice it says may be eligible for 10 Care, eligible for 10 Care, may be eligible for Cover Kids, or eligible for Cover Kids, in those cases the application has been sent to the Medicaid agency.
We passed the question through. Later on, they send the citizenship, and then we wait, and then we call. We never get anything back from 10 Care, and then we call. So I don't want the consumer to kind of get hold of me responsible for saying that there was a clear statement stating they had to bring their citizenship. I think that puts us in a bind, telling them that this is what it's supposed to be. And then they don't take it, and they never hear from Tennessee Health Connections, and they're like, you told me not to take it. It's tricky. It's okay to say what the law states, but in reality, you have a mother waiting for Medicaid for a child. She has to send a green card or a citizenship, and then you tell her, no, that's not what it's supposed to be, and then she never sends it.
Often she needs to send that information to 10 Care. She gets a lot of from 10 Care asking for that information. She does need to send that in, and within the 10-day time frame that they give her.
No, this
so,
is not coming from 10 Care. All of the people I'm talking about, is 99% is coming from the marketplace, because they said that they're not sending it to 10 Care before they, yes, they have to see the documentation of their citizenship before they send it to 10 Care.
Okay, so maybe that's the case. Is that a case where the identity hasn't been verified, and so they say they can't send the application to 10 Care until, or they can't submit the application until the identity's been verified? Is that an identity verification issue?
Do you get an eligibility, do you get to the end and the eligibility
yes.
notice says eligible or may be eligible?
Eligibility notice says yes, eligible for 10 Care.
Okay,
and
so this
10
is.
10 days later, we get a letter stating that bring your passport or bring your
from the marketplace.
Exactly.
And then the application never gets sent to 10 Care?
Exactly.
Okay. I haven't experienced that personally. I mean, usually if I see that it says eligible for 10 Care or eligible for Medicaid, that it has been sent to the state agency, and those letters from the marketplace can be ignored. If for some reason an application that says, if you have eligibility results notice that says eligible for 10 Care and it hasn't been sent to 10 Care, that would be a case to appeal and to send in with your appeal to 10 Care those eligibility results notice.
And do you call the Tennessee Health Connection to verify? verify on their end?
Yes, I mean, at that point, the marketplace makes it clear that the application has gone nowhere until they verify that that person has the right citizenship.
So I think we would need to see that case a little further, just because
this is not one case. It happens all the time.
That sounds like what you were saying, and more so like
Identity verification.
Right.
I can understand that happening with identity verification, and in that case, you would want to use that workaround that Tracy spoke about in the beginning. So maybe try next time to use that workaround and see if that clears up your situation.
The thing is that when it happens with people like that, we don't even bother. We call the marketplace straight away.
Okay, that definitely works too. To call
I don't bother playing around with this because
yeah.
90% of the time doesn't work. So we call the marketplace and then we go through the application and they say, yeah, I'll go to the documentation will be sent to the ticket bureau.
Right.
And then 10 days later, these ladies come back and say, we got this letter, what does that mean? And it's coming from the marketplace asking them to verify their citizenship or something.
Yes, that's still an identity verification issue with the marketplace.
Which you don't have to worry about marketplace identity verification if it's a 10 care or cover kids.
Correct.
So whenever I see that letter, I tell them to forget about it.
Yes, correct.
Well, if they come holding me.
If it's from the marketplace. All right. We'll connect later.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Correct. So if the
citizenship, so that upload portion is a little more important in that case. If she has a document that says, here's my passport, here's my card from the consulate, here's my visa, whatever, my green card, she needs to upload those things and make sure that that's clear if mother wants coverage.
Correct. So if the person, if the adult who's the application is in name of, if that adult is looking for 10 care coverage as well, then you do need to upload their documents. That's correct. But if it's just for the children, not the name of the applicant, or if the person is looking for cover kids, you do not need to upload those documents. So those are two really good points. TJC is a great resource for anyone who needs help with getting applications to 10 care or to cover kids. And that's also important to report things to them that may be systematic errors. If a lot of people are seeing the same issue, that they can help out, try to work through that with 10 care.
And if you see this screen, it means that your application has not been sent to 10 care or cover kids. If you don't see this screen, then theoretically your application has been sent to them. And this is not just Medicaid, this is CHIP and cover kids as well as 10 care Medicaid.
That was fun. Okay, scenario. So now we're going to go through a couple of family examples, and we're going to see what you guys think everybody in the family is eligible for. So the first one, Bob and Shayna live together with their two children, Jay, who's 9, and Kayla, who's 4. Bob and Shayna are married and plan to file as married filing jointly in 2017. They estimate that their gross income will be $36,000 a year or $3,000 per month. They are all U.S. citizens. Bob's employer offers affordable family health insurance coverage, but they are not enrolled. What programs are each of them potentially eligible for? So go ahead and shout it out. I hear 10-care, I hear marketplace, I hear nothing. So let's go through person by person. Bob and Shayna, what are Bob and Shayna eligible for? Nothing, I'm hearing nothing. And Jay, how about Jay who's 9 and Kayla who's 4? I hear Copper Kids, anything else? Employer insurance.
If they're eligible for employer insurance, would they all be eligible for employer insurance then?
Are there, the question is, are there any other options besides the employer insurance for any of the members of the family? Or, I'm hearing cover kids, and I'm, all right, let's pull up the answer. So, Bob and Shayna can purchase insurance on the marketplace, but they're not eligible for tax credits. So remember, it's an important point to know that, you know, some people maybe they don't want to take their employer insurance, and they're willing to pay the full price for a marketplace plan. It may be very rare, but. And Jay is eligible for cover kids. And Kayla, remember, another point is Kayla's only 4 and Jay is 9. That means they're in different brackets for 10 care eligibility, what level of income they can have. So in that case, Kayla is going to be eligible for 10 care, but Jay, because he's older, is over that limit for the older age bracket and will be eligible for cover kids instead of 10 care.
Is there any questions on that?
Any questions about this?
I just think it's important to realize that if they've got a family of 4 or $36,000, they're not going to be able to afford marketplace insurance.
Yes.
So, I mean,
yes.
I would not tell them they can purchase. I mean, if they would just laugh at that.
Yes. Absolutely. So she's saying if you're a family of 4 making $36,000, you're not going to be able to afford marketplace insurance without the tax credits. Yes.
But theoretically,
it's an option. But practically, they'd probably want to go ahead and take that employer insurance for at least Bob and Shayna, but remembering that Jay and Kayla could be eligible for cover kids and take care. Yes.
This is a good scenario when you have a family that have different coverage options, especially with the kids, with Jay, cover kids, and Kayla, take care, is to educate the parents on the difference of covered kids and 10 care.
Exactly.
Because most people think all things just 10 care, and covered kids is not 10 care, and they have specific benefit services that they utilize, especially the provider network is a little different. So this is a good education to say, Jay insurance is gonna look like this, and Kayla's insurance is gonna look like this.
That's a really good point. So making sure at this point, if you're working with this family, to let them know that Jay and Kayla's insurance are going to be very different. The cover kids is not going to cover some things that 10 care might cover, that their networks are going to be different. Even if they're both, for example, on Blue Care, that those providers who accept cover kids or 10 care may be different. Knowing that the things that are covered are a little bit different, and that cover kids can even sometimes come with copay. So knowing those few points is important, and it's important to educate the family on. All right, so moving on to the next scenario, it's going to be the same family, but we're going to change it up a little bit. So let's see, they're married and plan to file jointly. They estimate that their gross income is going to be the same as in the last scenario. Kayla is a U.S. citizen, but Bob, Shayna, and Jay are lawful permanent residents who have green cards for 4 years. They did not enter the U.S. as refugees or asylees, and neither Bob nor Shayna's employer offers health insurance coverage. Which programs are each of them potentially eligible for? So now our difference here between the last scenario and here is their employer does not offer coverage, and 3 of them are legal permanent residents as opposed to U.S. citizens. So let's start with Kayla, the U.S. citizen who's 4. What is she eligible for? 10 care, same thing, exactly. Perfect. And what about, what about Bob and Shayna? Well, guys, tax credits, you're right. And then Jay. So this is where it changed. He's no longer eligible for Cover Kids because he's within the 5-year bar limit, which means that he would instead be eligible to purchase plans on the marketplace with the premium tax credits. Any questions here?
No.
All right.
Is the option for Jay, is that only here in Tennessee, or does that go to the other?
Well, so some states don't have that same 5-year bar rule, but in Tennessee we have that 5-year bar rule. So some states say you could just go on to TIN Care Medicaid, even if you're not a refugee or asylee, without having to wait 5 years. But
if they came from, say, like New York, and they said, oh, in New York we had Medicaid, and now I'm here and I can't get Medicaid. And that's just the reason you're doing it.
Right. It's like it's up to each state in Tennessee.
Yeah, so these rules are Tennessee specific. Thank you. All right, next variation. Now they are married filing separately. Bob is going to claim Jay and Shana is going to claim Kyla. Bob expects to earn $14,400 per year or $1,200 per month. And Shana expects to earn $21,600 a year or $1,800 per month. That's the same total income of $36,000 a year that they were making before, but now because they're filing separately, they're claiming that income separately. All of them are U.S. citizen and they don't have any employer offer of coverage. So what programs are each of them potentially eligible for? There is a lot to unpack here. So first we need to think about what are the household sizes for everybody, because it's going to be different. So, right. First step would be to educate the consumer that if they file jointly, filing jointly is a requirement for premium tax credits. So the first thing you would want to do is educate the consumer that if they want to be eligible for tax credits, they should file jointly. But if the consumer is insistent for whatever reason that they need to file separately, then what would they be eligible for? So we know obviously that they would not be eligible for premium tax credits, either of the parents. But what's interesting is now that the father, Bob, is going to be eligible for TIN Care. His household is going to be his tax filing unit, him and his son. So they're going to have a household size of 2, and their income's only $1,200 a month because they're only counting the income for the tax filing unit. Shana won't be eligible for TIN Care because her income's much higher and will not be eligible for tax credits. Jay is going to be eligible for Cover Kids again based on his household size of 4. Because both the kids will have their household size of 4 because both the parents are in their household. And again, if this confuses you, the TJC training will go really into depth in household and income counting rules next month.
But the family of 4,
So going on to the next one, now, oh yeah, go ahead.
Maybe take care depending on her immigration, but like
says she's been living in the U.S.
That's a good point.
It is a good point.
She could be a refugee or asylee. That's not indicative. Yeah.
So if she entered the country as a refugee or asylee, that's a good point, that she might be eligible for TANF care. But assuming that she has not, she would be eligible for Cover Kids. Now, an important point here is that her income is $1,000 a month. Her partner's income, because they're not married, is not going to count as her household income. A lot of times you'll see people who are, you know, they call each other their husband or wife, but they're not legally married here in the U.S. In that case, you're only going to count the income of the mother.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
But just like Serene made a great point, you can have a green card and not be, or you could also be a refugee or an asylee. And if you had a green card and came with that immigration status, you would get on TIN care instead of Cover Kids. So. Mary made the questions. Just kidding. Oh, question.
Yes.
What if they are legally married in another country?
They have to be legally married.
Yes, I think they need to be legally married here in the United States.
As far as I understand it, if you marry in the country, it's illegal here. Yeah. So
married legally in any country?
Yeah.
That's an excellent question. I'm hearing. I'm hearing all sorts of answers. You need to be filing taxes together. If you don't file taxes, then what if you don't file taxes at all? I think that's an excellent question. Let's get back to, can I get back to you on that?
Yeah, it's not something you see all the time, but it is a good question.
That's an excellent question. Thank you.
If an American citizen couple goes to vacation in Mexico, and they decide to get married there, so they not be getting married here?
Oh, no.
They're already U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
So are you saying that the United States doesn't recognize?
No. Okay, so sorry. So I thought the question was pertaining to if you are married, your spouse lives in a different country, and his income is in the other country. Does that make sense? So,
if you got married in another country,
and then you're here. Oh, so if you got married in a different country and are living here, you still recognize the marriage. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But you do want to fill out the information correctly.
And they ask that on when you apply for immigration status, Serena's saying, they ask you that when you're applying for green cards or refugee status or asylum status. That gets asked ahead of time. That's not something you have to worry about, really.
But if you're an American citizen and, like, I had a consumer who went to Peru and married a girl,
Right. Of course, you look at every individual member's immigration status, but the marriage is still valid.
Right. They would still be considered married.
So they would still have to file jointly to get tax credits on the marketplace, for example.
So just to be clear, if you're married in another country, yes, you are married here, and you need to include that person on your application.
The same situation. Elena's now. Oh, Mo. Is not living in this country, and you're not filing taxes with that spouse, is that what you're saying, Mo?
Yeah.
Then you're not putting married on the application? So there's those cases as well. Did I get everything, Mo, or should I come back to your bill? I'll let Mo say. Mo is a bro.
Thank you. It depends on, like, in the application, if you're going to put married or single, it depends on how you file your tax. So if you are married but your spouse never been in this country and you never put your spouse in your tax, so in the application, you're going to get put single. It doesn't mean they don't recognize marriage, but it means they are not in your tax hold. So in this case, you're going to put single. But if your spouse came to the United States and you can claim, you can put in your tax, then you can put money at this point.
Thanks, Mo. Okay, so this is the same Ida.
Just to add to that,
Elena is DACA, so unmarried, with her partner, she's pregnant, she's DACA. What now? Carlos says cover kids, woo!
Okay, so this is just a reminder that DACA, although they have the employment authorization, is treated by the marketplace and other health insurance options as undocumented, as the same as an undocumented person would be. Do you guys want to keep, we have about 5 minutes left. We have a few more scenarios, but we also have some multiple choice questions.
We'll send this out too so you can work through these. The answers are there. But it might just kind of be a little, here's the answer.
Okay, so we're going to do some multiple choice, so you guys can just shout out the answer. When you feel it, I'll go ahead and read them out. A single pregnant woman with three other minor children, all claimed as tax dependents, would be considered to have a household size of?
Five.
Very good. Five. All right. Does anyone have questions about that? Okay. Which?
Unless she's pregnant with twins.
Right.
Six.
Triplets? Seven? We can keep going. Which of these 10 kid categories is a non-magi category?
B.
Beautiful. Spend down. A single 27-year-old calls you for assistance during open enrollment. They are a recent immigrant to the U.S. and have a legal permanent resident card. They have been in the U.S. for a little under 1 year and did not come as a refugee or asylee. They estimate that their yearly income will be about $6,000. What are they eligible for?
Yeah.
So I'm hearing C and D.
C.
The answer is C.
This is because they didn't come with that asylee or refugee status attached.
So this is a good reminder that someone in the 5-year bar for 10 care, even if they're under 100% FPL, will be eligible for premium tax credits on the marketplace. And
could you elaborate on that?
Yes. Thank you. A lot of people have questions about this. So, immigrants who are here, who are subject to the 5-year bar, for example, in this example, she has her green card, but she's only had it for under a year. You know, she hasn't passed that 5-year threshold for Medicaid yet. So the marketplace says that if someone is, you know, in the 5-year bar or as an immigrant ineligible for 10 care, then they can be eligible for premium tax credits even if they do not make that 100% FPL income threshold.
So maybe to drive the point home, what if this person has been here for 15 years, still legal permanent resident, green card, not asylee, not refugee, been here 15 years, same income.
Same care.
They're not eligible for time care because they don't have kids, they haven't been determined disabled, so they're now in the gap. So they actually, they get a break for being here with under 5 years. But as soon as that's... If they have children, then they'll be eligible for time care. They're categorically eligible.
In this scenario?
But in this scenario, it's just a single 27-year-old. She's not eligible for time care because she's not categorically eligible.
No, but if she doesn't have children, and the bar is 5 years for time care, she doesn't have children, so she wouldn't be eligible for time care anyway. If she didn't
even. Right. So that's why she's in the gap after
so
5 years.
I understand your question. So the question is, if someone, she's in the 5-year bar, but she wouldn't be eligible for Medicaid even if she wasn't in the 5-year bar because she's not categorically eligible.
It still does this because
the Medicaid gap is, the way the law is written, you know, the Medicaid gap wasn't supposed to exist. And so it was supposed to, you know, cover everybody. And so, because we have a Medicaid gap, that's why it's weird here where, because most states, there would not be those categorically eligible. They would need to be categorically eligible for time care, so it's just the income eligibility. Whereas since here we have the categorical and income, but this is a national law. So it applies even though we have a Medicaid gap. Does that, I think I didn't explain that very clearly, but does that make sense? Okay. Yes,
4 years ago, I realized that. The other point is that if we had to expand Medicaid,
the law was written originally with the idea that every state would expand Medicaid. Since these people wouldn't be eligible for Medicaid, then this was a way for them to be eligible for something until they were eligible for Medicaid. All right.
Is there one more question?
Any more questions about that? We're going to do our one last question because it's about 11:30 right now. So a new mother calls you for assistance. She had a baby 2 weeks ago and she was on time care for her pregnancy. How do you go about adding the child to time care? I'm hearing
me. Y'all are so smart.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, everybody. Does anyone have any last questions before?
That's sort of dense, and there's a lot of complicated things, but... When we send this, y'all can go through it in specific too, and go through these questions if you want more practice.
Isn't she deemed to the child is deemed to have hospitalized?
Yes, that's why you need to call Tennessee Health Connections.
And they do the
deeming. All right, thank you, everyone.
Another little portion that we're going to do before lunch, so let's just take like a 5-minute break, click, move around a little bit. Our next part's going to go pretty quick and then we'll have lunch.
Can we dance?
You can definitely dance. I tried to get speakers working all day yesterday and that did not happen.